if you would like to do more than work hard on a farm, you should study hard. So I took that advice, went to a small college called Davidson College, and then was blessed enough to earn a scholarship to Yale for my PhD, and then was a faculty member for a few years, and decided to strike out on my own. My passion was always about working with companies, small and large, to help them spread respect ultimately then employee engagement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, employee engagement is especially huge now with the whole millennial generation, right? It's always been important, but now it's got the spotlight, right?
Yes, absolutely. And my first book, Characteristics Don't Work, has to do precisely with the relationship between respect and engagement. So the more that people feel respected, the more they engage. The less respected they feel, the less they engage. And that's certainly, as you said, always been true. But I think in some ways it's even more true now with the millennials and certainly with all the opportunities that they have right now.
Right. And what and respect is, it has to be probably embedded in the corporate culture, mm-hmm. right? Everyone talks about corporate culture, but it's a lot harder to create it than to let it kind of goes its own way unless you kind of make
yes.
an effort to hone it in and create it what you want it to be, correct?
Yeah, you have to be really intentional when it comes to corporate culture. And so, and one of the reasons that culture is so important is because culture drives behaviors and attitudes, and then behaviors and attitudes reinforce the culture. What many companies fail to realize is that culture should be driven by their core values. And so, almost every organization I go to, including a call yesterday with the CEO of a company, was unable to name the core values of his company.
Wow.
And you just see this over and over again. So what happens is the culture just sort of becomes whatever it becomes. And what it should be is, again, focused on the values. And culture really matters. And as you know, it differs greatly, not just, of course, around the world. But one of the examples I give is, you know, I grew up here in a small town, Three Bridges. And in New Jersey in general, I think there's a mindset of, unfortunately, you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. And then when I went to school in Davidson, very small school in North Carolina, you know, you walked by somebody and it was always, hey, how are you today? Nice to see you, blah, blah, so very warm and friendly. And then I went to school in New Haven, Connecticut. And there, if you walk by, hey, how are you? You know, people clutch their small children. It's just different. And so,
yes.
And even within an organization, different departments, you know, if you're in the accounting department versus HR, there are different cultures. And mm-hmm. one of the things I think is, you know, respect matters in the world. My first book's been translated in a bunch of languages, which from, you know, Czech to Japanese and Korean. And what that tells me is that respect really matters in the world. And the reason that respect matters so much to us, Nicole, is that when we're respected, it means that we're viewed as having value to our tribe, whether that tribe is where we go to church or where in our community or where we work. So it really matters. Now, how it gets manifested behaviorally, of course, differs from place to place. And mm-hmm. it's always interesting in a global company, when you see people from different cultures come together, because some behaviors that may be considered respectful in some companies are considered disrespectful
yes.
in others. So those are always interesting issues to address.
Yeah, I think you have to take all that into account because you have to do a little homework, if you will, or just pay attention or understand because, yeah, it's like the soup slurping is in Japan or whatever the classic yeah. example is, right?
Yeah.
You slurp your food and that's considered a compliment to the chef, right? That for just a basic one. But let's tell us again about the names of your two books and what prompted you to write the first one and the current one.
Sure. So the first book, Carrots and Sticks Don't Work. People ask me, how do you get a book deal with a major publisher? It's McGraw-Hill. And what I say is you sit in your basement office and wait for the phone to ring, which is literally what happened to me.
Wow.
It was amazing. I was teaching a graduate course at Princeton at the time on leadership. And an editor at McGraw-Hill had read about my work in the area of respect and engagement. And they were looking for a book in the space, and so they said, would you like to write a book? And I was like, twist my arm.
Nice.
Now, having said that, I hate writing.
Oh, no.
Incredibly painful. But we got through it, and it's sort of a catchy title because, in general, the thinking has always been that carrots and sticks do work. And there's actually been now 50 years of research that shows that traditional reward and recognition programs like Employee of the Month, not only do they fail to motivate employees, it actually decreases the overall morale of an organization. And yet companies persist in having these, again, more traditional kind of carrot and stick approaches without really understanding, quite frankly, what they're doing. And so, and then the truth is we shouldn't even be focused on motivating employees. You know, that's a mindset of, I think of a Minnie Mouse wind-up toy. You know, as a manager, you're supposed to motivate our employees, meaning we're supposed to somehow wind them up, and then they run around, and the problem, of course, is they unwind, and then you're supposed to wind them up again. And that's really not under the game that we should be in. It's really more about an internal kind of motivation or drive. And that's the distinction with employee engagement. And you can foster that, you know, people that are coming to work and really want to deliver their best every day because they're engaged in what they do.
Right. And then their latest book, let's talk about it. How what prompted that?
So the first book, the Respect, is actually also an acronym.
Oh.
So Respect stands for, and this is, again, all in the idea of how do we engage employees. The R stands for recognizing and acknowledging people for their contributions. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, most powerfully with a handshake, or back in the day when we used to shake hands.
Yeah.
But, you know, just a simple written note, hey, really appreciate what you've done. It's really made a difference. And how meaningful that is. And, you know, when I'm giving a talk, I might ask people, how many folks have ever had a yellow sticky note on their desks with a thank you from their employer? And, you know, a couple people raise their hand and they're always smiling. And I say, what did you do with it? And invariably, they kept it.
Aww.
Right? They usually post it on their monitor and tape it because it falls off. And it just has a lot of meaning for people. Mm-hmm. And you
so think simple, right?
So simple. So simple. And unfortunately, I think it's sort of a testament to how little we're appreciated. And I have a quick story, and I know you like stories.
Oh, yeah, go for it, yeah.
I was in Port Authority in New York, going to see a client, and I was waiting for a bus to come back here, which, as you know, they run about every 3 days. So I had some time to kill, and I went into, there's a little restaurant there. And the waiter was somebody, Nicole, who was just genuinely so friendly and so upbeat and, you know, positive, and asked me how my day was and really meant it and all that. So when the check came, I signed it and I said, hey, John, thank you so much for your, you know, great service, positive attitude. It really made my day. So I watched as he went over to the cash register and opened up the billfold, and he sort of did a double take, and then he went and showed it to the maitre d' or somebody else, you know, who worked there. And the maitre d' said, that's really nice, you should keep it. And I just, you know, you think about that, and it's so sad to me in some ways that it would be so meaningful that a total stranger would write, hey, thank you, and meant so much he would show it to somebody,
right.
And then that person says, you should keep it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's just incredible. And, you know, the message for me is, or the learning is, every single day, Nicole, we have the opportunity to tell somebody the difference they make in our life.
Absolutely.
So the R, recognizing, acknowledging employees. The E is for empowering employees, so really giving them the tools and the resources they need to be successful, because the job of any manager should be making their folks successful. The S is for supportive feedback, so providing ongoing coaching and mentoring. The P is for partnering, so developing collaborative working relationships, breaking that hierarchy down. The second E is for setting clear expectations and holding people accountable. The C is for demonstrating consideration, which there's been lots of opportunity to do that, certainly during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
And then the T is for fostering a culture of trust. So when all of those elements are present, that really makes people feel respected and engaged.
No, I love that. Well, I have a quick story. So I met my husband at the Port Authority bus terminal in New York City.
Yes, that's pretty crazy. Yes,
it's a whole story, but I'll share that for another day. But that's where we met. So pretty crazy.
Were you taking the same bus?
Yes, we were taking a bus from the city to Newark to both catch flights.
Oh, that is wild. So, yeah. You never know.
Right? I know, right? You never know. Yeah, it was hilarious. So yeah,
that's a better story. Yeah,
it was a different time, but anyway. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come talk about your other book and other things. So we'll be right back.
Sounds good.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you in business, not a member of the Chamber? Come to the Hunterdon County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The Chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the Expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it!
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. And today we're talking with a very local, born and bred and raised Dr. Paul Marciano. He is the respect doctor. We're talking about respect in the workplace, respect for your coworkers, respect in the corporate dynamic. And he mentioned his first book, which was Carrots and Sticks Don't Work.
Yep.
And he just published a second book called Let's Talk About It. So let's talk about this book.
It's my third book. That's okay.
Sorry.
No. I try to forget my second book as well. So, you know, in my life, I guess, for me anyway, one of the things that I've seen is that there's so much dysfunction either caused by or exacerbated by people's unwillingness or lack of skill in having difficult conversations. So that can range from, you know, anything with your loved one, mm-hmm. from how you raise children to, you know, politics to intimacy. Mm-hmm. And then certainly in organizations, at the most kind of basic level, a supervisor or manager giving performance feedback to an employee, lots of conflict between team members. But one of the things I recognize too in organizations or personally is that if you and I may be in conflict with one another, it's not just about us. It's also about the impact that that has with the people around us. And then in organizations, of course, how that impacts the mission of the organization, the products they make, services that they offer. So one of my favorite stories is working with a small company, and the business development person and the salesperson had not spoken in months because one was left off an email and it led him to feel disrespected. And so you can imagine the sort of dysfunction that that would cause. And in this case, both of them were at an industry conference calling on the same companies, and they were like, well, I don't understand. And so coming into organizations and teaching folks the skills, and I do think it's about skills deficit. I think about the same way in the respect model, how to have collaborative conversations. You know, you can imagine probably everybody out there has had a situation personally where, you know, they're in the grocery store and they see that person that they had that falling out with, and you sort of try to dodge that aisle. and hope they didn't see you. And so it's a lot of matter of competency, right? We don't do things that we don't feel competent in. Most people don't jump out of airplanes, right? 'Cause at least I don't. But if we can increase by teaching people how to have those conversations, they gain both competence and confidence, then it's more likely. Because nothing good really happens not having the conversation. In fact, I would say, Nicole, that some of the most important conversations in our country right now are not being had, or being had in a dysfunctional kind of manner. Yeah.
So you, yeah, and on that note, who did you send your book to?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it was written for kind of everybody, because I think everybody can use some of this education, or most people anyway. But I decided to have a copy sent to every U.S. senator.
Amen to
that. Yeah, and I think that, you know, where could there ever be another place where there's more dysfunction and lack of collaboration? You know, there's really no conversation that goes on there. It's right. All about making, you know, I'm on a team, it's not Team America. You know, it's
there's team, a lot of sticks.
A lot of sticks. You know, and it's this team, you know, I'm on Team Red or I'm on Team Blue, and you know, the whole thing is you know, I've got to make the other party wrong, which means we can be right. It's just, to be absolutely honest with you, it's just disgusting to me as an American.
Yeah.
And so I did get one letter from a really nice senator.
Really?
We'll see. Yes, it's very nice. But I think, look, I'm not holding my breath. I would be more than happy to, in a way, and certainly with the local government too, to try to help facilitate more civil dialogue.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we're going to make any substantial progress until we're able to really have conversations and understand that we're on one team here, and that the American people, you know, every single, I think, election cycle, we all say we don't want these separate, you know, this conflict. And it just seems to me like every year it gets worse.
I know. It's a crazy time. We'll see. Hopefully some of them will read it and figure it out. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. Write your senator and tell him to read the book.
Yes, get the book. And by the way, I know there's been a recent some companies around policies about talking about politics and such in the workplace.
Oh.
I am actually an advocate of that policy. I just find, but both that and actually also asking people whether they've had the shot, right, a vaccination. I mean, those are just, to me, two highly personal issues, just like religion.
So you're saying ban, like, don't encourage the discussion of that in the workplace.
I don't think that there should be. I don't think there should be conversation had about that. It just, nothing good happens. I don't think
it's a divider.
It really is. Yeah. I really do think it is.
Yeah,
so.
No, I agree. Okay. Well, and so corporate culture and respect. Does it have to come from the top down, or can it come from the bottom up, or what's the? I mean, hopefully, whoever's hiring you to facilitate this, it's probably being made at a higher level, right?
Yeah.
Or do you approach it from both angles? How do you do that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Look, it's always got to be modeled by, hopefully, the CEO or owner, or at least somebody higher up in the organization. And a typical engagement, actually, for me is I've just recently been hired to. In an organization, there's just a core value is respect, and there are just so many examples of disrespect
right.
that go on. And so the director of HR reached out to me and then got the president on board, and so we are doing respect training workshops for all 300 employees.
Nice.
So because, you know, for me, respect was just necessary for a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when disrespect enters a relationship, often it doesn't get resolved. You know, I say that unlike acne that goes away on its own, when we have conflict with people, it just doesn't tend to go away on its own.
No, it just it festers, right? Yeah.
It festers and it promotes resentment.
Yeah, no, that's not good for anybody, right? Yeah, and I'd also be interested to know, so how do you think that So you spent time in academia, and then you're an entrepreneur, and you've spent obviously time in business. So how is that transition, and how do you see? I feel like there's a dearth of soft skills today with students, and so how do you? Well, and we've got what, 5 generations in the workforce now mingling. Mm. So do you address those issues too? Like kids coming out of school, they're book smart, but they really have zero street smarts or communication skills or anything. So do you touch on any of that in what you do? Or I mean, that's a loaded question, I know.
Sure. And in fact, I was just talking yesterday with a college who has a center for entrepreneurship. And, you know, they would like some help in working with their students in some of these quote-unquote soft skills, which for me personally, I don't think they're the soft skills. I think they're the hard skills.
I've heard that before.
I really do.
No,
I
mean, it's true.
You know, you can teach somebody how to run a bulldozer, really, or to work on a computer. Yeah. You know, some of these quote-unquote soft skills, including things like empathy, are really challenging. And certainly dealing with team dynamics, when you have 2 team members that are in conflict with one, that's hard stuff.
Yes.
You know, millennials just have a different way of approaching things. Mm-hmm. In fact, a story, a little bit off track, but I mentioned having grown up on a horse farm. And in the early 1970s, I think it was 1972, there was this blizzard that came through. And my father had to get out from the second story window and make his way to the barn to, you know, feed and water the horses. And at that time, we had a gentleman who was had been in World War II. His name was Leo. And he would come every morning and do the horses. So my father gets out there, and the door to the barn is partially open, and he walks in, and there's Leo. And my father says, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "I'm doing my job." And my father says, "How did you get here?" And there were train tracks that cut along the side of the property, and he had walked 2 miles down the train tracks to come to work. Mm-hmm. Now, I would compare that to today, when there would be, some modest snowfall, and maybe the supervisor gets a text, "Hey, I'm not coming in today." You know, there is such a profound difference, I think, in terms of work ethics. And that's, you know, it's fine. I know I'm generalizing, which I shouldn't be, and creating stereotypes, but, you know, certainly millennials today largely look for greater work-life balance. Again, nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, by the way, in the pandemic, I think people are working harder, largely, and under more stress than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. But you know, millennials are also looking to be part of companies that make a difference, and I think that's huge. And that's there can be an issue of respect, right? That's one way in which people respect their company. So the company doesn't have to be a nonprofit related to literacy, but it could be an organization that, you know, in some way supports literacy programs or allows employees to take a couple of days a year off to, you know, contribute to nonprofit work. So absolutely working with companies to help the more senior, let's say, or traditional styled managers deal with these millennials is something that I do a lot of. There's not necessarily a magic wand for this one, but it's something that's very, very necessary.
Yeah. Do you follow Lindsay Pollack at all? Like that's her whole avenue is the multi-generational workforce. And she has a new book out too. But, and back to the work ethic. So my dad grew up on a farm and we were always taught to work, to volunteer, to give back. And my kids, like I've said this before, it's more important for me that they have a teenage job that they work at than taking an AP class. I'd say I choose that every time over. I'm like, you know, yes, you should study and whatever, but you're going to have a job when you're a teenager for 3 or 4 years. You're going to work, whatever it is.
I could not agree more. I can't. There's so much learning that occurs as the result of that.
Life
skills.
Exactly. No,
yes. A lot comes with that. It's humbling for some kids, especially in a place where we live around with some very high socioeconomic status. And it teaches them how to, you know, be able to relate to other people, you know, responsibility. And I think critically, hopefully, begins them on the path of managing money.
Yeah, but yeah, managing money, managing people, managing themselves, managing their time. Yeah, there's so much managing going on. And as the teenage brain is firing and developing, and it's very important. So that's my soapbox for that. So
my father, actually, when we were raised, said if you want to eat 7 days a week, you work 7 days a week. So that's traditional first generation Italian American.
I love that. I love that. Well, hopefully you had some fresh pasta in there.
Yeah, no question about that.
Good. Well, also I want to ask you, of course, people are hopefully familiar with the quote from Mahatma Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. So why is that on your website?
Well, first of all, I am a quoteaholic.
Okay.
I've had a website. It's a one-page website. I haven't visited it myself in a long time, but it's called simplesayings.com.
Oh, my gosh.
And it has 170 of my favorite quotes. And, you know, when I do respect training, I remember so clearly this one time that people will leave that workshop. And they will say, boy, you know who really needs this training? And, you know, and it's always like them.
Yes, yes.
And so I think in general, when there's things like conflict, you just got to look in the mirror, you know, and you've just got to say, am I the role model? And that means no matter where you are, who you are in any part of your life. And, you know, one of the things I say about the respect model is that it's an actionable philosophy. And but what I mean by that is, you know, there are lots of different philosophies. You can consider yourself a philanthropist or an environmentalist or part of some, you know, religious affiliation. But if you're not actually living it, it's just a philosophy. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, with something in terms of respect, it's got to be really part of who you are as a human being. I remember having worked with this one gentleman, and he was definitely disrespectful. And the plant manager said, you know, if Jimmy can't straighten out, and he was a very toxic team member, he's, you know, we got to fire him. He's amazing technically, but we just can't keep him. And so I engage in coaching with him. I do a lot of executive coaching. And we went out for coffee after one of the sessions, and he was really rude to the waitress, and I looked at him like, you know, what was that? And he looks at me, and it's like light bulb goes off, and he says, you mean I'm supposed to respect everybody? Yes, that's the way this works. Yes. You know, it's about who you are being at any point in time in your life. So
And I, with my kids and their friends, I'm known as the please police. Like, no matter where we go, what we're doing, I'm like, please, I'll correct anybody, any kid, anyone I see, please and thank you. You know, that common courtesy goes a long way, right? Especially at that young age. You got to ingrain it in early.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, what else, what are you working with right now with, what are you seeing people come to you for? Has it changed since the pandemic? And as people are changing the way they work, where they work, how they work, has it changed how you're going to present your workshops or how you're going to deliver them?
Yeah, I've been probably one of those stubborn people, a little bit my head in the sand during this pandemic, because I think probably like many of us, at least at the beginning, thought, well, this would be over sooner. And obviously it hasn't been. So I haven't done a lot of workshops online until recently. Now, what's been in some ways really exciting has been it's opened up the world for folks like myself who do presentations in a way that it would never have before. Mm-hmm. So I've got two workshops, presentations in Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
I've got two in Luxembourg. I'm, you know, talking with somebody from Belgium and Germany. And all over, so that's really kind of exciting to be able to share my work with folks all over the world in a way that I may not necessarily have done before. Certainly, still continue to work with, you know, managers and VPs and executives in the area of being more effective in their role. And often, again, it's associated with being disrespectful. So a prime example, I'll actually be traveling next week to Houston, which is so exciting. Yay, that we're actually getting out. And it's a somebody who is a plant manager who his style is yelling and screaming. You know, that's what he does. And that's how he figures he's been successful in the world. And one of his right-hand person just quit.
Mm.
And in an exit interview, simply said, I'm just not going to get, talked to like that and disrespected in that way. So my coming in and helping people, I mean, the ROI on this is really obvious, because if I can help this individual be more effective and not lose key people, and in fact, instead of demotivating them, engaging and motivating them, it makes a really big difference, which, is very satisfying for the work that I do. I'm actually a clinical psychologist by training. So really engaging with people and understanding them and allowing them to confide in me and such. So I continue to do an awful lot of work with individuals such as that. And now that things are opening up, and actually right here at the Chamber, in a couple of weeks, we'll be doing a workshop on Let's Talk About It. Again, I'm really passionate about it. And I think that it's, again, a skill that can be used widely, and especially in organizations where difficult conversations are not being had.
Right. I mean, conversations are so tough. I mean, just and if you learn, you need to learn it, because it affects every single aspect of your life, right? Not just the company, but your personal relationships. And you talk about corporate culture, and you mentioned work, workout, worship, like those three things. Can you talk about those three pieces and how they all relate?
Well, I think they all relate, because it's where we live, right? It's where we live. And so it goes back to, the extent to which we're being respectful and feel respected. And the more we're respected, the more influence we have. Respect is tied strongly to this idea of survival, in that when we're respected, we're viewed as having value, and then we're protected in some way. If we're not viewed as, if we're not respected, it means we're not viewed as having value, contributing to our quote-unquote tribe, and therefore we're expendable. So everybody, I think everybody wants to be liked, but when push comes to shove, it's more important for them to be respected. And we've seen examples in which there's a loss of respect by, political figures and, others that are well known, where when there is a loss of respect, their power goes away, right? Because respect actually equals power, where power is the ability to influence. But I wanted to go back to a word that you used, because I can't let this one go, Nicole. Difficult. And I've used it several times during this conversation, because it's what we generally say, is difficult conversation. For me, though, reality occurs in our minds, our speaking. Reality for us occurs in our speaking. And so when we say something is difficult, then it's going to be difficult, because that's the way that we say it is. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I would say, driving in New York is really difficult, right? I never do it. In fact, this is embarrassing, but out here in farm country, I never even had to learn to parallel park to pass my, driver's license. So driving in New York is really difficult for me. But it's not difficult for my friends that go in all the time. So it's really important that in our language, so for example, and let's talk about it, turning confrontation to collaboration, I talk a lot about the importance of a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, one of the first things is in the mindset is, if this is going to be a confrontation, the way I occur and come across is going to be totally different, right? It's like I'm putting on armor, mm-hmm. and in my mind, it's about kind of attacking the other person and protecting myself, mm-hmm. rather than saying, this is an important conversation in which you and I may have differing opinions, but I want to learn to understand that. So, mindset is so important.
Yep, and using correct words, like getting used to using different words and presenting with different words and thinking different
language.
Words. And right. Yeah. Language is powerful.
Yeah. Language is so powerful. And just, again, it's mindset, it's approach. So if, I go through, my work's all about putting it on the playing field. So in the book, the end of every chapter is putting it on your playing field. So things that I recommend that you try or you do, so as an example of that, let's say you and I are going to have a conversation that, because of our past relationship, right, I call it our relationship history bias, right, the lens through which I'm going to see this conversation is the lens which is based on my experiences with you. And so one way to start a healthy conversation is to say, Nicole, let me share with you what I know or I believe I know about this situation. And then I'd like for you to tell me, you know, what I'm missing or what I've gotten wrong, mm-hmm. you know, and not make any assumptions. So, in fact, I make the assumption that I don't know the whole story. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and I go into a conversation, again, with colleagues or loved ones, with the mindset that there's something for me to learn.
Yeah.
I may not have all the facts. I may not have the right answers. And in fact, I might even be wrong, which sometimes can be really difficult. Quote, unquote,
difficult.
I know you're not supposed to say difficult. Unusual, uncomfortable. But, you know, that's those are things that are just important if you're going to have a collaborative conversation.
Right. You have to shift your mindset, like you said. And my daughter's always getting mad at me because if she's venting and frustrated about something that happened at school or whatever practice and stuff, and I said, well, maybe the coach is dealing with her own stuff, or maybe she had a bad day,
yes.
or maybe. So, you mean you don't know where the other person's mindset is? And she's like, stop defending them. And I'm like, no, you can vent and I get where you're coming from, but it also, you know, you don't know where they're coming from. And it, you know, it's amazing we even talk at all. So.
It is so important, Nicole. I always say, you know, almost everybody has something heavy going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. They do. I mean, especially during the pandemic. And so for me, it's about giving one another a break. In fact, I remember doing a workshop one time and one of the women sitting in the front row kept yawning and having a hard time staying awake. And, you know, I realized maybe I'm not the most exciting presenter, but how does it not annoy you? How possibly not annoy you? And so during the first break, she came up to me and she said, listen, I just want to apologize. I know I'm having a hard time staying awake. She said, my husband is a paranoid schizophrenic, and
oh,
I've
wow.
been up all night with him.
Aww.
And I just think they're like, you know, you just don't know what people are dealing with. And so giving people a break.
Right. Yeah, I'm reading that book, Hidden Valley Road.
Oh, no, I don't know that.
No, it was on Oprah's book club. But anyway, no, it's about this family. They had 12 children, and I think four or five of the boys all were paranoid schizophrenic.
Wow.
Like, it's a huge, it was this
wow.
this family, and it talked, yeah, it's all the rage. But Hidden Valley Road, yeah, it's big, because it's, yeah, science and psychology and all kinds of, so check it out. Anyway. All right. So let's see how we're doing here. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you in business, not a member of the chamber? Come to the Hunter County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The Chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the Expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it.
When friends are not enough and you are struggling with depression, anxiety, or addictions, it's time to seek out help. Mental health is one of the most important building blocks to a healthy life. Tune into Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon and listen to many topics that pertain to good mental health. With Ruth Altamura Roll, a licensed professional counselor, as your host, you will learn about many facets of good mental health. Let's remove the stigma. Go to www.altarolecounselor.net for more information about my practice. And please follow me on Counselor's Chat on Facebook. Remember, Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon. I wish you good mental health.
Tune in every Monday morning at 10 a.m. on Hunterdon Chamber Radio for Chamber in Action with Chamber President Chris Phelan and Good Morning host Big C, where we'll keep you informed on all the issues, all the initiatives of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and our business community here in Hunterdon County.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We're on Facebook at Happy Hunterdon. And today we're talking with Dr. Paul Marciano. He's a native of New Jersey, lives right here in Flemington, and he is the Respect Doctor. He is the president of Whiteboard LLC, and he's teaching us how to have conversations for collaboration and avoid confrontation. So he's going to give us some tips as human beings and how we can better communicate with one another.
Yeah. So people are always saying, you know, active listening is so important. And it's particularly important when you disagree with another's perspective. And so I think I've found that the trick to this is to listen to the other with intense curiosity. Because, again, if you and I are in a conversation, I think about our elected officials, we're not really listening to one another. Unfortunately, as human beings, what we're doing is focused on making the other person wrong so we can be right. And so if we can approach it from the perspective of, you know, first of all, hopefully I respect the other person and say, gee, I wonder why they're approaching this from such a different perspective. I really want to understand where they're coming from. And of course, that does a couple of things. One is it shows respect to the other person, and it makes it much more likely that they're going to listen to you. Secondly, you probably are missing a lot of important points and ideas because you're not listening, mm-hmm. right? You're just in your mind, right? You're going through all those kinds of thoughts. So beginning from this place of listening, and then from that, you know, paraphrasing, I think, is one of the most important skills you can possibly use, which is simply, Cole, let me make sure I understand what you're saying. And that really makes the other person feel heard and understood. And by the way, if you actually are wrong, then it's really important that the other person corrects you. And so, again, once you've paraphrased, it allows the other person to kind of relax their shoulders a bit and maybe ask you about your perspective. Or you can simply say, I'd like to share my perspective. It really is about having a civil dialogue and respectful conversations. You shouldn't be afraid to say, I don't know. And you really shouldn't be afraid to say, I'm sorry. Mm. You can imagine when people are, and maybe me more in personal relationships, kind of yelling and screaming, and the other person says, I really apologize, I was wrong. It's like, well, where do you go from there?
Right, that shuts it down.
Where do I go from there? Do I keep yelling and screaming? So there are these things that I think allowing ourselves to be vulnerable is something else that's really important and can really reduce sort of the amount of stress involved in a conversation or the amount of emotional intensity. So instead of, again, being so aggressive, we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and say, you know, I really don't know the answer to that.
Right, and that, well, Brene Brown is just everywhere, right? She's like taken off like wildfire with all the vulnerability and the, you know. And they always say we have two ears and one mouth, so you're supposed to listen right. Twice as much, right? Isn't that the...
I listen at least twice as much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with people who ramble, who I coach, I often say, I want you to imagine six of you in a room together. You know, and they usually laugh and they go, oh my gosh, that would be chaos. You know, and I say, it's exactly chaos. And when you tend to ramble, that's another way in which people feel disrespected because you're not giving me the time and opportunity to share my thinking. And by the way, rambling is really ineffective in the sense that if you and I are, if I'm listening to you ramble, there may be a point that I wanted to make early on, and then I'm trying to hold on to it and remember it, so I'm really not listening to the rest mm-hmm. of what you have mm-hmm. to say.
Is there a trick for us in a meeting or in a conversation or in our family to start to pay attention to this kind of stuff? Because it's not something automatic you can just switch, right? It's who you are and your personality and your way of communicating. So is there a way that you introduce people kind of gently into, like, how can you start?
Yeah, so one thing is, of course, you want to self-monitor. So one way you do that is by coming into a conversation and with bullet points in mind, you know, maybe even written down. I always say be really clear what you want as the outcome. So sometimes, you know, we're upset and we want to vent. Yeah. Well, maybe that is the outcome you want. You want to feel vent. That probably isn't going to really move the conversation along. But if what you want to do is to sort of calm things down, what are you going to say and do that are going to have that outcome? And so that really directs and focuses your actions, right, and what you're saying. I will always recommend that people say something like this if you're a rambler. Nicole, I know that I can become very passionate and intense about this issue, and unfortunately it can lead me to just sort of ramble on and on. And so my commitment is to not do that. My request is that you cut me off and you jump in and just say, hey, Paul, there's something I'd really like to share here. I just think that's important to give people permission to do that.
Right? I give you permission to cut me off, right? No, that's good.
Yeah, my intention. And when I think, you know, I talk about, you know, when managers sort of onboard new employees, making sure that they share their management philosophy. So what they believe to be true about how they can bring the best out in people. And so one of the parts of that kind of onboarding conversation, I believe, should always be, is never my intention to treat you disrespectfully. If you ever find that I'm doing something or not doing something that leads you to believe that I'm treating you disrespectfully, my request is that you bring that to my attention and give me the opportunity to clean it up.
Yes, and we were talking about corporate culture and going back to the kids graduating from college and getting jobs and interviewing and what's important for millennials and finding that first fit or second or third job change out of the pandemic. How can you get a grasp on what the corporate culture is like and how you'd fit in there? I mean, that's hard because it's not on a piece of paper. It's not in a rating. It's, you know, as a new employee, how can you get a gauge on corporate? I'm all about the vibe. Like I just,
right.
But in a virtual interview, how do you get the vibe?
Yeah. Well, by the way, here's what I've always said about if you're a leader or owner of a company, if you want to find out what corporate culture is, if you can eavesdrop on a conversation with one of your employees having a cup of coffee or a drink with a friend, and that friend says, hey, what's it like to work there? That's the corporate culture. That's whatever the answer is the corporate culture. Now, absolutely true, that idea of the fit. And I do think it's incredibly challenging, as you said, during this pandemic to get sort of the sense and the feeling of all that. And it's going to be really interesting coming out of this, seeing if people are staying on or leaving organizations having a high level of turnover. I'm anticipating it'll be a high level of turnover. You know, companies in the past, there was sort of this competitive advantage if you offered some flexibility. Well, it will be a decidedly competitive disadvantage if that flexibility doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've viewed this experience kind of from a company and kind of cultural perspective that before the pandemic, you know, last January, we were all like airplanes flying along, you know, doing it. Every now and then we hit sort of a bump. And then all of a sudden we were struck by lightning. And everything just went topsy-turvy, and our instruments didn't work anymore. And then, unfortunately, some companies, small businesses in particular, went out of business, mm-hmm. right? They crashed in the analogy. Others, of course, kind of figured out and find their way. And now, thankfully, we're coming down through the clouds. And when we're not going to land where we took off. I think that's really clear, at least for most companies and most people. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And the F word is going to come in a lot here, the F word being fair. So what's fair for some people?
Life is not fair.
Life is not fair. But you know, where we live here, as you know, the bus, who knows if the bus is going to come back. But people would normally regularly commute an hour and a half each way into the city. Or even more from their mm-hmm. home. So they have experienced, most of them, a wonderful life work kind of balance being home. I've had a lot of executives say, you know, I get to eat dinner every night with my spouse. I mean, that just never happens, and be there for my kids and all that. So you're going to have folks that say, in some cases, require people to come back to work. and maybe in other cases offer more flexibility. You can imagine being in a company where one manager might say, hey, it's really okay for my folks to work flexible hours. Another manager says, nope, everyone's got to come in. People can say, that's just not fair.
Mm.
So this I think this issue of kind of fairness as companies figure out again how to restructure the workday is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend. So she works in Trenton for a company in Trenton, and she said they're completely divided. Management is completely divided right now. And so she's just like, I don't know what's going to happen because they're duking it out right now. So it's great. I'm sure that's not the only place it's going on, right?
No. I mean, I'm having conversations with my clients every day about this issue. And, you know, I think you look at the fact that if you're going to retain talent, you're going to have to offer flexibility. And look, for some people, this has been a tremendously positive experience, such as being able to stay home. And for others, my gosh, it's been just so terribly stressful. I have a gentleman who, he and his wife have 7 children, 5 of them are adopted, 4 of them are special needs.
Wow.
You know, and trying to be home and work through all that. I mean, it's just extraordinary what people have had to deal with in their lives. And, you know, some of them, obviously school reopenings is critical.
Right.
Critical in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, helping people and respect, of course, has been a huge issue during this period of time. You know, respecting and valuing, showing consideration for folks. Again, especially they're going through tough times. So here's a fairness example. A company I work with, there's a woman and she works, you know, sort of 10 hours a day. Now her kids are grown.
Mm-hmm. Right. Different situation.
It's a very demanding environment. But there is other people that tend to have more flexibility and might leave, you know, later or earlier and all this kind of thing. And what she's saying is it's not fair. Just because they have children and responsibilities at home, that's not fair. They get to leave early or they get to work from home. And in some way, she's right.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's our mantra at home, though. Life is not fair. Like,
yeah.
It's not fair. If you don't like the situation you're in, you have the power to change
yes.
your situation. You can complain yes. and stay, or you can, I mean, and there's, you know, there's a million things that go along with that,
of course.
Know, and there's consequences for your actions. And, but, you know, but inherently life is not fair,
yeah.
right?
And you might as well just throw that word out the window, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. That's true. All right. Well, we got a few more minutes, but I can't let you go today without talking about
Madeline.
So how do you know Madeline?
So my grandfather is Ludwig Bemelmans, my maternal grandfather, obviously, who wrote and illustrated Madeline. And it's just, of course, a very proud, you know, legacy. The book was actually named after my grandmother, who I was very close with. Her name was Madeleine, but my grandfather said it was difficult to rhyme, so changed it to Madeline. And, yeah, you know, it's been considered by many one of the most, I don't say, important books in children's literacy, and they've attributed that to the fact that Madeline is such a strong character. She's a courageous little girl, and stands up and is fearless, and served as, you know, sort of a role model for girls. And I think it's just wonderful, you know, and it certainly has withstood the test of time. You know, from 1939 to now. And again, and that's been translated in all kinds of languages too, because this idea of serving as a wonderful role model, I think it's just terrific.
Is she the first feminist?
maybe, right?
Well, I love the picture where she, you know, hikes up her shirt to show her appendix scar, right?
Yeah.
You know, and just...
And by the way, people often ask sort of where this came from. My grandfather was... I think it was the island of Capri, maybe, was where he was. And there was one motorized vehicle, a bread truck, and he was on a bicycle, and the bread truck hit him, and he ended up in the hospital. And there was a little girl next to him that had just had her appendix
no
out.
No way.
And he was lying in the hospital bed, and that's how he began to think about Madeline.
Oh, my God, I love it. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's just, it's iconic, it's wonderful, and it's so exciting that, I mean, we have this...
Yeah,
treasure here in New Jersey, and there's still a lot of like his artwork. And he hung out with Ernest Hemingway.
Oh,
and
he had an unbelievable. You know, he was an American, the dream. I mean, he came to this country in 1914, didn't speak the language, He actually never graduated from sixth grade.
Wow.
Which is why his mother put him on a boat and sent him over here, because otherwise he would have become a foot soldier and, wow, you know, in the war. And, you know, again, just came here with absolutely nothing and worked in restaurants and hotels for years and years. You know, we really, really struggled and through, you know, the Depression. And then just, you know, just his career just took off. And he did 32, I believe, New Yorker covers.
Wow.
And wrote, I don't know, 35 books. And wow, about half of those were actually adult books. And so he got to travel the world and meet all kinds of royalty. And he,
Onassis.
He was very good friends with Onassis. There's a wonderful letter my mother has from Onassis inviting my grandfather and her to spend Thanksgiving on the boat.
Wow.
On the yacht. And in fact, he was very good friends with Jacqueline.
Kennedy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was, but just led the, you know, the American dream.
Do you have his Rolodex? Like,
oh, well, actually, it's interesting you say that. We actually do have a Rolodex of his.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it's super cool, actually.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, and again, talk about a work ethic. Hello.
Oh, gosh.
Right? Yeah, if you could bottle that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Dr. Paul Marciano, your website is paulmarciano.com?
That's it.
All right.
And feel free to email me at paul@paulmarciano.com. And, you know, if you're interested in any of what I've talked about in terms of respect or the Let's Talk About It, please visit Amazon or any other book distributor and even your public bookstore, which would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. We had a great time, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, Nicole. Bye.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
A Nashville, Tennessee police officer was shot Tuesday evening in an ambush-style attack while responding to a 911 call, where a gunman opened fire on officers as they knocked on the door. Officer Brian Sherman was shot in the upper left arm as he and other officers responded to a setup call. Amid reports, a woman was shot inside the home. The suspect took his own life at the scene. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who was found guilty in the murder of George Floyd, is asking for a new trial. 10 issues have been raised by his defense lawyer. Change of venue and sequestering the jury requests were denied by the court. Also, new evidence regarding juror number 52, Brandon Mitchell. He may have lied to the court about opinions about police before the trial. Photos reveal Brandon at a BLM rally in D.C. wearing a Get Off My Neck t-shirt. Thanks for listening. It's well appreciated. We are USA Radio News.
Who's really running the country? Joe Biden? The First Lady? Kamala Harris? Maybe Barack Obama? Already, Kamala Harris is the most powerful vice president in history. All this week, Newsmax's Greg Kelly asked the tough questions about Joe Biden and who's really in charge at the White House. Every night this week, Greg Kelly is on Newsmax giving you the news you need to know. So watch Greg Kelly tonight at 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern and see his series, Who's Really in Charge? Newsmax TV is America's fourth highest-rated cable news network. Everyone is talking about Newsmax. Find Newsmax on all major cable systems. If you don't get it, call your cable system, tell them you want it. Or get Newsmax free on your smart TV. Or tune into Roku, Amazon Fire, Pluto, Zumo, or YouTube. Or just download the free Newsmax TV app on your smartphone and watch us anytime, anywhere. Millions of Americans are watching Newsmax. So should you.
Forget the politicians. Forget the teachers' unions. Fox News sat down with the ones that matter the most during school lockdowns. The kids. Mason Setter is a sixth grader in Philadelphia.
I'm learning something, but I think that the teachers are doing a great job, but it's not what it could be if we were in person.
Lily Rosen is an eighth grader in Torrance, California.
I'm just going to speak for myself. I'm not doing terrible, but my brothers, on the other hand, they're failing, which is not very good. So I do think we really need to get back into the classrooms because it'll be far more beneficial than online is right now.
As many public schools shut down for the pandemic, private schools remained open without any adverse effects. House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, the Republican from Louisiana, is supporting Representative Elise Stefanik to replace Representative Liz Cheney as House Republican Conference Chair. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy was caught on a hot mic Tuesday saying he's lost confidence in Cheney and has had it with her behavior. USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
A Belgium farmer moving a stone in his field has created an international incident. Dan Araki from the Ohio USA Radio News Bureau reports.
A farmer in Belgium may have accidentally started an international incident by moving a stone. The farmer, annoyed that the rock was in the way of his tractor, pushed it about 7 feet to the side to allow him to continue working his field near the Belgian village of Ercouenes. However, the stone in question was a marker laying out the border between Belgium and France. The marker dates back to 1819 when the border between the two nations was first drawn out. Local authorities say they'll get in touch with the farmer and ask him to replace the stone marker.
Belgium hosts the European Union and NATO. It is located between the Netherlands and France. The U.S. birth rate fell 4% last year, the largest single-year decrease in nearly 50 years, according to a government report being released tomorrow. The rate dropped for moms of every major race and ethnicity.